James Watson and Francis Crick's discovery of the structure of DNA has reverberated throughout the scientific world and rippled through the U.S. economy and agriculture, medicine, and drug development. It also has produced a new industry, which in turn is shaping the process of scientific discovery. NPR's Snigdha Prakash has the third in a series of DNA stories.
50 years ago, when Watson and Crick were racing to crack the structure of DNA, their competitors were scientists at other universities. At the end of the 20th century, genetic scientists were once again in a race to read all the information in human DNA. This time, university and government scientists weren't competing against each other, but against a brash American startup called Celera. Daniel Kevlis is a historian at Yale University.
I don't think that Watson and Crick could possibly have seen the degree to which their discovery would be transformed into the vast biotech industry that we have today.
In 50 years, Watson and Crick's discovery had moved science to the heart of an entrepreneurial economy, spurring investors to pour billions into gene-based research. Indeed, U.S. industry now spends far more on scientific research and development than the federal government, $170 billion in the year 2000 compared to the government's $65 billion. A great deal of that spending is by the biotech industry. The shift in spending has all but erased the old boundaries between academia and industry, says Gillian Woollett of the Biotechnology Industry Organization.
It used to be that all your basic research was essentially done with government funding, particularly NIH funding, and all the applied research was done in the private sector. Now you've got substantial overlaps in who's doing the research. Certain companies specialize in certain diseases. Academia has obviously increasingly got commercial interests, is a big holder of patents, and also the government has commercial interests too.
This sea change began back in the 1970s when two California scientists found a way to snip DNA strands into individual genes and move them from one organism into another. The newly spliced DNA was called recombinant DNA. Scientists could now conceive of using bacteria as drug-producing factories and creating plants that were naturally resistant to pests.
It became apparent not long after recombinant DNA technology really began to get rolling that there was actually money to be made.
Keith Yamamoto is a professor of biochemistry and biophysics at the University of California, San Francisco.
So entrepreneurs began to put together companies and establish product lines, and that field has really prospered.
The first entrepreneurs were scientists, such as recombinant DNA pioneer Herbert Boyer. He left his university laboratory, joined forces with a venture capitalist, and formed a company called Genentech. It was 1976. 2 years later, says historian Daniel Kevlis, the young company announced its first product, human insulin grown in vats of bacteria.
The announcement by Genentech sent kind of an electric shock through the corporate world. And then when Genentech went public a couple of years later, its stock, which was offered at 35, shot up on the first day to around 84. That doesn't seem like much from what we've experienced with the dot-coms. But at the time, it was quite extraordinary.
Old-line pharmaceutical companies who had dismissed the genetic revolution suddenly wanted in on it. Big Pharma started testing and manufacturing biotech drugs under licensing deals with some of the startups. Almost immediately, in 1980, American companies overtook the federal government in R&D spending, and the spending gap between the two keeps widening. The pharmaceutical industry has now produced more than 100 biotech drugs and vaccines, and many more are in development. A third of all medicines in clinical trials are biotech medicines, to treat cancers, heart conditions, and neurological diseases. The lure of biotech profits has transformed other industries too. The big players in the pesticide business, companies such as Monsanto, Dow, and DuPont, saw a whole new opportunity in agriculture, says Kim Neal of the American Soybean Association. The new niche? Biotech crops.
As of this date, 40 different commercial crops have been genetically engineered and approved for planting in the United States.
75% of the U.S. soybean crop is genetically engineered. So is 70% of the cotton crop and a third of the corn crop. Big trading partners in Europe may not like this, but the trend will almost certainly continue with, among other things, bioengineered animals. Indeed, the industry's most ambitious products are likely in the future. That means that while government funding for pure science will remain crucial, the agenda for scientific discovery will be set at least as much by industry and its pursuit of profit as by the traditional lust for knowledge. Very different from Watson and Crick's quest at Cambridge University 50 years ago. Snigdha Prakash, NPR News, Washington.
Tomorrow, DNA research moves forward to what may be learned about the human brain.